4 and then shove back. It's a first down for Kansas City and goal to go.
What a great catch by Travis Kelce. That ball was a little bit high. He's able to catch it, secure it.
The Kansas City Chiefs have won a ton of big football games lately. 5 Super Bowl appearances in 6 years, 3 championships with maybe another one coming, and they have star power too. The world's best quarterback. The biggest pop star on the planet sits in a luxury suite at their games. And they have a coach who's in a ton of commercials and who knows how to push the right button at the right time. Andy Reid is undoubtedly the Chiefs' greatest coach of all time, but he's not the first great Chiefs coach. That title belongs to a 5'7 Midwesterner who became a legend one Super Bowl Sunday many decades ago. This is Sports Wax by GrumpyBuck.com, a podcast where we explore sports stories from yesteryear. Memories of players, coaches, and games that take us back in time. Welcome to Episode 1, the Super Bowl's most famous mic'd up moment.
If Dallas doesn't move for the first down here, they'll go for the field goal that could win the game.
That's Kurt Gowdy. He's calling the 1962 AFL Championship game for ABC. It's the Dallas Texans playing at the Houston Oilers. And you might be wondering, who are the Dallas Texans? Long story short, this oil baron named Lamar Hunt tried to buy the NFL's Chicago Cardinals and move them to Dallas. He was rejected, so he did what any oil baron would do. He started his own football league. Hunt's American Football League, or AFL, kicked off in fall 1960. He owned one of the teams, the Dallas Texans, and he needed a coach, a good one. He tried to get Bud Wilkinson, who'd led Oklahoma to a 47-game winning streak. He also tried to get Tom Landry, who was then an assistant for the New York Giants. They both turned him down. Instead, he settled for a guy who'd been an assistant during Hunt's days as a bench warmer on the SMU football team, a guy named Hank Stram. No one had heard of Hank Stram. He'd never been a head coach before. He was short, only 5'7". The son of a tailor, he was always well-dressed, wearing a suit during games and constantly straightening his tie. And here's the important part. Stram was an innovator. He did things way before anybody else in pro football. Stram emphasized weight training. He held off-season mini-camps. He used multiple formations on offense. And he even served Gatorade to his players. Now, that's all normal now, but it wasn't in the 1960s. Stram also scouted historically black universities before that was common, and he had this uncanny ability to take players who'd flamed out with other teams and turn them into contributors or even stars. This 1962 AFL Championship game is after Stram's third season. He and the Texans are about to knock off the 2-time defending champion Oilers in overtime.
The kick is up, the kick is good. Dallas is the champion.
There it is, the game-winning field goal.
On a 24-yard field goal by Tommy Brooker.
And there's something else you should know about this moment. This is the last game the Dallas Texans will ever play. They're about to move to a new city and change their name. More on that in a minute, but first you should meet Hank Stram. Let's listen to his post-game interview.
We're here in the playing field, as you know, and here's Hank Stram, the coach of the now champion Dallas Texans. And Hank, congratulations.
Thank you very much, Jack. It's a great thrill, and I just can't compliment this squad enough to see the way they came back and stayed in the ballgame in the second half like they did and finally came back and won it. It was a great tribute, I think, to our squad, and we're just as proud as can we that we can win the championship and bring it back to Dallas, Texas.
So you're probably wondering, why would a team that just won a championship up and move out of its hometown? Well, the Texans were on top of the AFL world in 1962, but there was just one problem. They weren't top of mind among Dallas pro football teams.
This is the story of a brand new team on the Texas scene, the Dallas Cowboys.
The NFL's Dallas Cowboys started the same season as the Texans. The Cowboys went 0-11-1 in 1960, but that didn't matter. The NFL thought the AFL was inferior, and so did the general public. This is the Cowboys' official highlight film from that first season. Listen to this line.
But the Cowboy management also knew that Texas fans wouldn't settle for anything less than the world's best football. And that means the National Football League.
That's directed at the AFL. Imagine that. You go winless, and you're still taking jabs at the other team in town. So, after beating the Houston Oilers to win the 1962 AFL Championship, the Dallas Texans moved to Kansas City, where they started the 1963 season as the Chiefs.
Professional football, that most fascinating, most exciting of all spectator sports, came to Mid-America in 1963 when the Dallas Texans became the Kansas City Chiefs.
No one would have known at the time, but Stram was building an absolute powerhouse roster. Listen to him talk about his team.
Merle, actually, you know, I can't help but feel optimistic and enthusiastic about our 1964 squad. As you know, we have an outstanding core of veterans returning, plus the fact that we have done an excellent job of signing young people for the coming season.
He's got Lynn Dawson, Bobby Bell, Buck Buchanan, and Bobby Hunt. He's going to add Otis Taylor, Mike Garrett, Curly Culp, Willie Lanier, and Jan Stenerud in the next few years. And I totally recognize that you may not know any of these guys, but all of them made first-team All-Pro. Six of them are in the Hall of Fame.
A commanding 24-7 lead. The Chiefs' hard-hitting defense, outstanding all day.
This is New Year's Day, 1967. It's the AFL Championship game again, this time at War Memorial Stadium in Buffalo. It took the Chiefs a few years to get back to the title game, but all that talent is starting to stack up. They have a really good team, and they just pound the Bills.
The final score, Kansas City 31, Buffalo 7.
The Chiefs are back on top. But remember last time the franchise won the AFL championship? How it immediately left town for Kansas City? This time, the team heads to Los Angeles. They get to play in the first ever AFL-NFL World Championship game. It's the game we know today as the Super Bowl.
At this moment, bands are massed down to our left.
When the Chiefs were beating the Bills for the AFL crown, the Green Bay Packers were at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, knocking off the Cowboys for the NFL championship. You'll recall that the Cowboys and the general public had this attitude in 1962, that the NFL was superior to the AFL? Well, that attitude is still around in January 1967. No one thinks Stram's team has a chance.
Third down three from the 37.
The game is surprisingly close at half. The Chiefs are down just four, but Green Bay outscores Kansas City 21-0 after intermission. In the end, the Chiefs get smoked, 35-10. Not everyone gets a second chance to win it all. Super Bowl history is littered with players and coaches and teams who came this close to climbing the mountain, only to fall short and never get back again. But there was something about the Chiefs and Hank Stram, an energy, a charisma that made them feel inevitable. After the 1969 season, Stram leads the Chiefs to a win over the Oakland Raiders to claim a third AFL championship. The Chiefs then travel to New Orleans to take on the Minnesota Vikings in the Super Bowl. It's the last AFL-NFL title game. The two leagues are merging after the season. So, what's the deal with this mic'd up moment? Keep in mind that the concept of being mic'd up didn't exist in January 1970. When NFL Films came to Stram with the idea of wearing a microphone, he refused. They kept pushing him and pushing him. Finally, he agreed to do it on one condition. No one on the Chiefs roster could know he was wearing a mic during the game.
Hello again. We're at the Sugar Bowl, Tulane Stadium in New Orleans.
That's Jack Buck. He's calling the game along with Pat Summerall on CBS. The Vikings are huge favorites over the Chiefs. But when the game gets started, it's clear the Chiefs mean business. Through the first quarter, they aren't just keeping up with the Vikings. They look like the better team.
Pat, I suppose it would amount to an editorial, but to this point you'd have to say that Kansas City is taking the game to them.
The Vikings can't do much on offense, and the Chiefs are really moving the ball. There's just one problem. They're settling for field goals.
Good again. The score is now Kansas City 9 and Minnesota nothing.
Halfway through the second quarter, it's 9-0 Kansas City. And that's when they get a huge break.
Center road kicking into the wind, gets it up high. It'll be returned by Charlie West, who takes it, fumbles it. Kansas City has it.
After the third field goal of the game, Viking safety Charlie West fumbles the kickoff. The Chiefs recover at the 19-yard line. A few plays later, on third and goal from the 5, Stram tells Lynn Dawson to run 65 toss power trap. Mike Garrett runs for a touchdown. After the extra point, it's 16-0 Kansas City. Here's what it sounded like on TV.
Urbanis is on the left side, and here's Garrett slanting in. He ran by Dixon, the extra defensive lineman who was put in there, and went right in from the 5-yard line for the touchdown.
How, 50 years later, do I know the play was called 65 toss power trap? It's because Stram was wearing a mic, and he wouldn't shut up about it.
65 toss power trap. Look for 65 toss power trap. What does it look like?
Hey, look for a 65 toss power trap. Let's see what it looks like.
65 toss power trap. Right, it might pop wide open, Rats.
He's clearly pleased with himself when the play goes for a touchdown.
Yes, sir, Rats. The mentor. 65 toss power trap. Yeah.
Is that there, boys? The old mentor?
You saw it again on television.
Yo. Coach pumped it in there, boys.
The Chiefs players thought the usually talkative Stram was being even more chatty than usual during the game. When they found out later he'd been mic'd up, it all made sense. He was playing it up for the audio. Clips of Stram's running dialogue with players, coaches, referees, and anyone who would listen have become the stuff of legend on highlight films.
Jumped out of there as soon as we made contact.
I thought you were talking about you being on the field.
No. What?
Move it up a little bit.
Pop it out of that end zone, yeah.
That's an excellent call. Those officials are doing a hell of a job.
Back to the game, though. The Chiefs are cruising by the fourth quarter, and they force 3 Vikings interceptions in 3 possessions. As the sun sets over New Orleans and the seconds of a 23-7 victory tick away, the Chiefs hoist their coach onto their shoulders and carry him across the field.
On the shoulders of his player. And after being vanquished by Green Bay in 1967, the Chiefs are the champions of pro football.
After the game, Stram doesn't take any credit for himself. He puts it on the group of guys he's assembled to win football games, big football games, games like the Super Bowl.
This just has to be our greatest moment as a football team. You know, as I look back on the game today and think about this great Minnesota team and ask myself why we won it and how we won it, I immediately think about our defensive linemen, then our linebackers, and then, of course, our defensive backs. And then it doesn't stop there. It goes to our offensive linemen, our offensive backs, and then, of course, the great job that Lenny Dawson did at the quarterback position. Then you have to go to our specialty teams. And when everything's all said and done, what does it spell? It spells 40 people.
Here's the thing to remember, though. Stram was Lamar Hunt's third choice for head coach, at best. But he turned a brand new franchise into a 3-time AFL champion, and he turned the Chiefs into Super Bowl winners for the first time. Stram coached a few more years with Kansas City and then a couple with the New Orleans Saints. He never lost that verve and charisma that made him a mic'd-up superstar, but he also never went back to the Super Bowl. I remember him doing Monday Night Football games on the radio with Jack Buck, the same guy who called Stram's Super Bowl victory. I can still hear Buck introducing his broadcast partner.
Stram, this is the first time I've seen the New Orleans team all year. You've seen them a few times. Do you expect an upset tonight?
It's very possible, Jack. I really mean that sincerely.
Fittingly, Stram's last game in the booth was the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 30 between the Cowboys and Steelers in January 1996. He died in 2005. New Orleans Saints on defense are 14th in total defense, 14 against the rush, 5 against the pass,
and that's really been their problem. They'll get some points, but they... 22-19 San Francisco. McKinnon is in at running back, first down and goal to go. Play action fake, right side throw!
As for the Chiefs, they've become synonymous with winning during Andy Reid's tenure. But remember that it took 50 years for them to recreate the Hank Stram magic, returning to and winning the Super Bowl. And no matter how many Lombardi trophies the Chiefs win, there can only be one first. And that first was Hank Stram in the New Orleans twilight, a man who stood 5'7", but who'd climbed the highest mountain in football. Sports Wax is brought to you by GrumpyBuck.com. Subscribe to listen to a new episode that shares a sports memory with a heavy dose of nostalgia each week.
Hey.
All right, so are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay, so you were texting me yesterday about that NFL Films marathon regarding the Super Bowl.
Yes, I was.
Which we used to watch when we were kids all the time, right?
Church, because they would play it on Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah,
there were only like 13 of them back then,
so
we'd like catch the early ones, miss some, and then we'd get some more after church.
So since the Chiefs are going for their third straight Super Bowl, this episode is about their first Super Bowl victory and their head coach. Mostly, do you remember their coach?
Hank Stram.
Oh yeah. And what's crazy about it is I always remember this NFL Films highlight because he was the first coach to be mic'd up.
Okay, that sounds right. Because they have him on the sideline. He has the blazer with the Chiefs logo. That's right.
Yeah, he was the son of a tailor, so he was always well-dressed. But, yeah, the one I remember is there's this really specific play call that he sends in for their first touchdown, 65 toss power trap, and he just goes on and on about the play. You remember this?
No. I don't remember that part.
Well, you got to
right.
You got to go back and watch Super Bowl IV, and what's funny is he would only be mic'd up for NFL Films if they wouldn't tell any of the players, because he didn't want them like performing for the mic. And then after the game, they're like, "We noticed he was a little chattier than usual." And it's because he was mic'd up. Anyway, that's a good one. But yeah, I was trying to explain to Harry how great the NFL Films highlights are with John Facenda, you know, doing the voiceover. And I actually saw some of it last night. We were out and, yeah, I remember Josh Rubin down the street being, you know, we couldn't agree on how many Super Bowls the Steelers had won, and we said we would wait for Super Bowl Sunday to watch all the... I mean, it's crazy. I don't think our kids would appreciate that kind of stuff, because now you can just Google it immediately, but back in, like, 1990, you know, that's how you either went and got an almanac or something, or you watched all the NFL Films highlights.
Started with Super Bowl 7, and I saw 8 all the way up to like 13, maybe 14, and that's when I shut it down. So that's pretty good.
I saw some of 8 when we were out, because that's at Rice Stadium, right?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Vikings and Dolphins.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think Paul Warfield gets hurt, and they showed Don Shula giving him the business about getting back into the game, and... just a different time. I can't believe what crappy stadiums they played those games in back then.